The biggest thing that hits me is that most people at work feel victimized. They feel victimized by processes, by leaders, by coworkers, often because they feel like a number. They feel like they don't have any kind of say in what's happening to them at work. And the same thing in many cases is the way it is for customers too. The customers are often feeling like, well, we're just kind of hopeless, or like, we're just out here just like paying money and getting this service, but like, is our voice ever really heard in the process?
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Clearfield, Utah. I'm your host, Matt Lyles, and this week I'm talking with Heather Younger. Heather's an international keynote speaker, and she's the founder and CEO of Employee Fanatics, a leading employee engagement firm. She's the host of the Leadership with Heart podcast, and she's the author of 3 best-selling leadership and employee engagement books, including her latest, The Art of Active Listening, How People at Work Feel Heard, Valued, and Understood. Now, if you've been listening to me for a while, then you know one of the steps for empathizing with your people, whether it's your customers or your employees, is the process of active listening. The problem is that, well, most people think they're doing a pretty good job of active listening, but it turns out they're actually not. There are some key steps that we tend to leave out. Thankfully, Heather's got a framework that helps ensure that you include these steps every time. And when you do active listening right, it'll make the difference between assuming what your people want and actually knowing what they want. And that's all the difference in the world. So here it is. Here's my interview with Heather Younger. Hi, Heather. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to talk about the art of active listening.
I'm excited about it too.
But full disclosure, I got to be honest here. Out of all the interviews that I've done, I think this may be the one where I'm likely the most nervous because we're talking about active listening. And as I'm making sure about the sound levels are steady, as I'm looking through all my notes and my prepared questions, I've got to make sure that I'm actively listening to you.
So true. That's exactly what we all get caught up on, I think. I think we just, there's all the things. And then someone's right beside us, right in front of us, and they need us to be there for them. And we're just so focused on all the things. We never really listen.
Well, and you know me, I focus on customer experience and employee experience. And I believe that much of what we deliver is the same across both of those channels to both of those parties. And I think one of the things that customers and employees want the most is to feel valued. So how can actively listening to them help them feel valued?
I think the biggest thing is active listening takes us from thinking we know what other people want to actually knowing what they want. And then it allows us to meet that need, like pinpoint that need for them and go fix and solution for the thing we know versus the thing we assume or the thing we guess. That's the difference.
Yeah, well, and we all know what happens when we assume.
Oh, yeah.
And so what's interesting to me, so for the book, you surveyed, what, over 30,000 different people, employees and customers around this? So it's not just based off of articles, not just based off of theories and anecdotes. Like there's real data, like real heavy data to back this up. So I'm curious, with all this data, was there anything in there that really jumped out at you, that really surprised you with the findings?
I think the key, the surveying has kind of been a part of my career because what I do in my consulting firm, it's called Employee Fanatics, is help organizations listen more effectively. So all of the surveys, the listening sessions, the culture teams, the ERGs, all the things and the ways that we listen. And we're primarily internal, although I started like the majority of my career, like 60% of my career is in customer experience. And as I would go through either listening to the people in person, seeing their survey responses, doing the focus groups, any of those types of things, the biggest thing that hits me is that most people at work feel victimized. They feel victimized by processes, by leaders, by coworkers often because they feel like a number. They feel like they don't have any kind of say in what's happening to them at work. And the same thing in many cases is the way it is for customers too. The customers are also often feeling like, well, we're just kind of hopeless, or like we're just out here just like paying money and getting this service, but like, is our voice ever really heard in the process? So I think that's the biggest kind of thing that I can tell you and the people who are listening is that there's a way for us to stop victimizing people at work. And I do think that the crux of it is how well do people feel like their voices are heard, like they're part of something bigger than themselves, like they have buy-in or they can get buy-in. People buy into their concepts, that they're respected for who they are based upon what their opinions are and what they and how they show up. And so those are kind of like the biggest kind of themes. And I agree and think, I think it actually applies for customers too. And because customers want to be heard just as much. They want products that reflect their voice. They want products that reflect and services that reflect their values and the things that they want and the things that they need inside their workplaces. So yeah, all of this is interesting, right? It's a mashup.
So what do you think is driving that? What's causing the barrier to be able to listen to people, whether it's our employees or our customers?
I think it's part of what you talked about earlier, which is like, we have all the things. There's just all the things, all the distractions. We haven't, we don't really calm ourselves much, center ourselves much to say, what's happening right in front of me? I call this recognizing the unsaid. There's a lot of stuff that's just happening in our environment. And we're not pausing enough, pausing to reflect, recognizing it, stopping to take it in, to see the seriousness of something in front of us because we're just so rushed. That's probably our biggest barrier.
Oh, wow. And honestly, I think that's a barrier even in our work sometimes, like where we know we should be focused on a certain task or a certain project, but we've got Slack messages, emails, texts, people popping in the door, all these different distractions.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's happening all around us. And I think that right now we think of social media and Slacking and texting and just all the things and the beeping and the buzzing and the, right? I think those are, while, you know, technology obviously helps us, it's really hurt us from a relational standpoint. And so that I would venture to guess prior to that, we were much better listeners. There's a lot of people that still listen to respond. That's kind of been going on for centuries, right? We listen to respond. We listen to get our word out. But I would venture to think that we are much better pre all the tech that's exploded onto the scene.
Yeah. And it seems like there's just more and more tech and more distractions to keep us from doing that. What you said earlier reminded me of a small exercise that one of my friends and author, Christy Wright, she lives here in Nashville. She says to remind yourself and to ask yourself the question, what's right in front of me right now? Whether that's someone that you're supposed to be present with and listening to, or whether that's a certain task or a certain thing that you're supposed to be focusing on and not paying attention to all the different distractions. What's right in front of me, or who's right in front of me right now?
Absolutely. I would say that like listening to someone else is the biggest gift we can give them because it's so rarely that it happens for us. And so we feel it more profoundly when someone gives us their presence that way.
So based on that, it sounds like active listening is more than just hearing what someone is saying. What truly goes into active listening?
Yeah, I have like in that book, The Art of Active Listening, I go through a 5-part framework, kind of 5 steps. I do that as a way, it's a way for us to, I want to simplify the otherwise maybe complex. I want people to be thinking through, make it easy for them to gauge where their holes might be. So I talked earlier about recognizing the unsaid, which is like the nonverbal cues, the things in our environment, the kind of things we feel that are around us that's there, but we don't always, we either notice it or we decide to know, we notice it, but we don't do anything about it. And then they're seeking to understand. And then seeking, it's really about leaning in. We think of, oh, I'm going to shake my head. I'm going to repeat what they say. I'm going to reflect what I hear. And that's part of the seeking. But what I found, and it's a big frustrating point for most people, is that we are parroting back what people say. We aren't recognizing how they're feeling about what they're saying. And we need to encapsulate their emotional response to what's happening to them and what then they want us to do about it. And so we do some of that in that next step. It's called decoding. And when we decode, we actually pause to reflect on what we've heard. We pause to reflect on what we've seen, and we decide what we're going to do next. We might go do research. We might talk to other team members. but we do pause to take the time. We don't jump to action after we hear something from someone, a request, unless it's like a life or death or an emergency type of situation. And then we go on to act. And that action is the fourth step. And that really is, it dots the I's for people. It says to people, oh my gosh, they really are listening, because they see the proof of that listening. They see the proof of us leaning in when they see the action on the other end. A lot of us don't really think of the importance of taking action. We just say, oh, we just listened. And sometimes just leaning in is all the person wants. Just listening, seeking, and paraphrasing and being there in the moment is all the action that the other person needs. But we need to qualify that. We need to ask them if there's something else they need from us. And then I'd say, aside from that, the last step is closing the loop. And closing the loop is getting back to them to let them know what we plan on doing about what we heard. It's telling them, oh, this is what we heard. This is what I heard. And this is what you needed. And this is what I'm doing. Or this is what I can't do. Or maybe we can do this. This is a compromise. I do this a lot because it's requests. It's like, I have an example. This is just something that just happened. I have somebody who I was going to, they were looking at trying to bring me into their organization. They had multiple different introductions they made for me. None of them really panned out except for one. One person referred me to another organization outside this organization, and now I'm going to be their keynote speaker in the fall. I went back to the person who was originally trying to do all of this flurry of work on my behalf to let her know that nothing internally happened. But by the way, I did get this thing, and I want to thank you so much for that. For her perspective, that's the closing the loop I needed to do, because she listened to me. I listened to her, but vice versa. I saw what she was doing, her efforts. And so it all took place. All the things were happening in behind the scenes. She had no clue, but I want her to know that her efforts meant something. So I came back to her to close the loop, to let her know, by the way, this thing took place. So it could be a request. It could be some action someone took on your behalf, something that came from something else. Whatever it is, it's feedback. It's hearing the person in the need. And at the end, is there something that you did or they did or whatever that needs to be followed up on, so that they stamp in their minds that the voice that they used and the actions that they took even resulted in something, and you need to tell them what that is and that it resulted from their voice. It is a psychological connection. It's a brain connection that you need to make, because it shows them and it gives them back that power. So that victim stuff starts to dissipate when we do that.
And I think when that happens, I think when you go all the way through taking the action to close the loop, a lot of times I think it helps people to feel more comfortable in sharing their voice, sharing their opinion, engaging in conversation with you, because they know that something's going to be done, that they know that it's not just going to fall on deaf ears, so to speak.
So true. Doesn't that motivate you? I was thinking about this, thinking about it often. On the customer and an employee side, as we think of customer surveys or employee surveys, and yes, most people hate doing those. And why do they hate doing those? Well, they hate doing those because nothing ever happens. Yeah. That's really the main thing. Nothing happens. And even if it does happen, they're not even sure it's based upon them. They don't even know if it was related to what they said. So if they see something change, they're like, oh, that could have been because of my feedback. Might have been. Potentially. But if I close the loop,
yeah,
and I tell you the action that just took place, or that's going to be happening over a certain period of time, is based upon what it is you asked us to do, what it is you said that there was an issue or a problem or things that you would like to see changed. Boy, what kind of power does that give someone to see that and to really know that?
Oh, yeah. Well, talking about employee surveys, one of my friends helps companies with employee surveys, and she says that one of the questions that she always likes to include is, I forgot the exact words, but something along the lines of, I have faith that my company will actually take this feedback and do something with it.
I love that. That's great.
And it's really telling.
Oh, I'm sure the number is super low. Yeah, which is why people don't like to do the things. And they don't like to do roundtables and all those things a lot of times, because they're like, what are you going to do? What, are you going to do anything?
Yeah, it's just an exercise in just complaining. And maybe people feel even worse about it when they know no action's going to be done and no one's really even listening to them.
Exactly.
So out of these five steps in your cycle, are there any steps that you think are missed more than the others?
I would say the decoding. So that would be the third step, and closing the loop. Most people don't pause. We mostly want to jump into action, and we're doing it for a good reason. We think it's coming from our heart. We think we're good people because we want to go act. But acting too quickly really doesn't give the other person as much power as we could be giving them. If we pause to let them know, pause to think about what we're going to do, be reflective and inclusive in our decision-making, and then come back to them and let them know what we're going to do. And then the other one, closing the loop. Yeah, we are so proud of ourselves after we've taken some action based upon what someone said. we rarely go back and go, oh my gosh, did you see that thing? We did that thing, or we're doing that thing. Did you? And it's because of you. Like, thank you so much. And that was so cool. And every time we take action along the way, we continue to fill them in on what's happening. And it's because of them. And again, it says to them, wow, I'm kind of important. Wow, I'm not just a number. They think I'm valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. That goes back to what everybody wants. Everybody wants to feel valued. My theory around not closing the loop, I think, has to do with the fact that, especially in professional environments, we're in such fast-paced, distraction-oriented environments that we're always focused on the next action. As soon as we finish an action, we're on to the next action. And so because of that, we forget to talk about the action that we just did.
It's so true. Yeah. And that's why, like, for example, if you're a manager of someone else, the best way to be able to follow up is when you do your one-on-one meetings. You should be having one-on-one weekly meetings. When you do that, you can do that. But I think, like, even if it's a customer, it's not somebody you manage, it might be an account you manage or some a customer you have, you still should be doing like a quarterly review, or should be doing some kind of follow-up with different customers on a regular basis, on the key customers especially, to let them know, and maybe like one to many, like in newsletters or videos or some kind of like thing that you know, updates inside of a software system to let them know this thing is happening based upon their voice or based upon a previous survey. So I think no matter what, there's a way to do it. You just have to be intentional, and you have to know that it's super important. I don't think people really understand the importance of leaving someone feeling like they're valued, heard, and understood. They just don't think of it. They just like, oh, it's just something we do. It's just something I just listen to this person. We got to think it through. We have to think it through.
And maybe it helps to remind that person, to remind the listener, hey, the last time you wanted someone to listen to you, how did you feel during the process?
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's a good one.
So I want to go back to decoding, because this, to me, this is the one that's the most fascinating to me, because it's one that I haven't really spent much time understanding. So what would be the ideal way to go through the decoding step?
The biggest thing is, like I said, after they've talked to you, so you've leaned in the seeking phase to really try to gather, and you think you know what they want because you've asked them what at the end, if there's action you need to take, you've asked them what that action is that they want you to take. So now you're like, okay, thank you so much. Gosh, that was a lot. And I didn't realize. Do you mind if I come back to you in the next 24 hours? If I come back to you in the next 72 hours, give me a time to think about it a little more, to go do some research, to talk to the team, and then I will come back to you. And then I'll do that by, let's say, Friday. I'm just kind of giving a good date. And then make sure you follow up by Friday. Even if you don't have the answer, even if you've done some of the research but you're not done, follow back up and say, I know I said it's the 72 hours. I don't quite have the answer. I don't quite have this, but I just wanted to be respectful, let you know I am still working on it. I know I've reached that kind of mark of when I told you to be back to you. Then finish it up and give them a new deadline. So say, okay, I promise I'll have something in the next couple of days. Then you come back to them and you let them know what's happening. That's the close the loop part. But in between, it's all the research, the reflection, the collaboration, the inclusion of other people to decide what next steps are. That is the decoding process.
And it sounds like there's an importance of maybe micro closing of loops along the way at each step, saying, okay, I've listened to you, I've understood, or like, now can I take this time? Here's my next step. And to me, like, that kind of helps close the loop at each step through that cycle.
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's, if you think about, so when I go back to the person and they're like, okay, great, no problem. Well, there's not like, I'll just continue my decoding and come back and start the action or figure out if there's any action and then come back to close the loop. But if for some reason I go back to them and they tell me more, or there's more information, I enter back into the cycle by paying attention to the emotional state, leaning in to hear some more. So I'm kind of, so sometimes you're like in the decoding phase, you come back to let them know you can't do something. And now they send you back to the beginning. It doesn't always go like full on linear or full on just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sometimes you're one place and they kick you right back to the beginning, depending on what they're doing. If they all of a sudden feed you more information, but let's assume it, they're like, okay, great, come back to me. You're right. Every time you take an action, if there's three things that you're going to do or three promises you're going to make, the key with closing the loop is to come back at each one of the milestones to be like, oh, did you see this? And that would be the same above organization or to customers to say, these are three things we promised. And did you see that? Last week, here's what you did. It was because of you. And then 3 months later, did you see we finished this thing? And it was because of you. And you come back again. And you have to continue to do the closing the loops on every milestone for sure.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think it's really helpful just to put less of the guessing on the other person's part. Like, did they even listen? Are they doing anything? I don't know.
Exactly. Yep.
So in the examples that you were talking about, we've talked about how, you know, someone will ask for something, you'll make a promise, you'll deliver on that promise. But what if somebody asks for something and you can't actually give them what they're asking for? How do you solve for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a hard thing to do. I think there's two things I want to say there. One is, if they know, if they have heard you, if they have built a relationship with you and you built one with them up front of trust, respect, mutual communication, collaboration on different things, then when you have to go to them with, sorry, we can't do this, or we've looked and we can't do this, it doesn't hurt as bad, or they're not taking it necessarily out of line. And here's what I would say too, is that with action, the action phase, you don't have to act on everything. Sometimes you go back and you're like, that action is not going to align with our strategic journey, our path. And it doesn't make sense, or even we haven't heard any of this feedback from other customers. Maybe this customer is not a huge strategic client, so the value isn't there. Or again, internally, the same thing. Is this going to benefit all employees, all stakeholders? So evaluating the strategic nature of the action you want to take, I think, is key. Figuring out if it's life or death, is the house on fire or not? And then saying, what's the impact to more than one person or to the relationship or whatever it is? It's not always required. And you come back to them and you just say, you know, we did the research. I heard what you said here. You were talking about this. I went back and talked to the team, and we looked and we dug deep. And then I went here and then I did this. So now they're hearing the journey you went on on their behalf. And then you come back. But one thing we discovered is actually this thing isn't in fact broken. But what sometimes does happen is you say, this thing that you thought we need to change actually is not the issue. Because I did go back and dig deeper, this is what we found, which is another thing we can solve for. And this would do this and this for you. What do you think? And now they're like, okay. Or sometimes they're like, okay, well, I mean, I guess you can't do that. At least we tried. But they know that we went on a journey on their behalf. We didn't just hear them and drop the ball. We didn't hear them and never said anything back. We went on a journey in the decoding phase on their behalf before we decided whether we could or couldn't take action, or whether there was a compromise to the action. It's very logical, super reasonable, and super respectful to do it that way.
A lot of times, I think we'll say, okay, you asked for this. We can't do this. Here's what we can do. And we think that that helps. I really appreciate that step of decoding and then explaining the decoding process. Because like you said, it's sharing the journey that you went on to research and figure out how you could solve their problem. And lets them know, you know what, like I went to bat for you. I'm not just saying that I went to bat for you. Here's what I actually did.
Yep. It does. It's like value, like the value prop is loaded in the act, in that background act. It's like, because it's partly actions embedded there. It's embedded in the fact that you decided to take more time and not just discount what it is their voice is, what they wanted from you. And you went that extra mile, even though maybe you didn't land on the exact place they wanted.
And sometimes a lot of people like recognize that they may not really get what they're asking for. What they really want is to just be heard.
So true. And they feel heard even if you say no. They feel heard if they see you went on a journey for them.
Is there anything that we should avoid? Any actions or phrases or things that we should avoid as we're trying to listen better?
I think the parroting thing is a big one. Don't parrot back what someone said to you. This is something that was taught to us a long time ago, where someone says something, we go, I hear what I hear you say is this, and this is what you said. And they try to say the exact same words that what they said. And then it's okay. It feels like you are a parrot. And instead, if you want to be like human to human relationships, paraphrase what you heard with the context of what you didn't hear, but what you saw. So sense for their emotional feelings around what it is they've said. So when you paraphrase, you include the emotional stuff too, or the stuff of like, I felt anxious about that. I felt unsettled about that. That frustrated me. I got excited about that, whatever that is. And so you paraphrase it all into one. So it could be like someone shares information with you. You've already gotten to the bottom of that conversation and you realize they don't actually want you to do a thing. They just want to talk to you. But at the end you say, oh my gosh, wow, Matt, that was a lot. And I can't even imagine what you're going through right now. And that when you talked about I could see how unsettled it left you. And I just, let me know, is there anything I can do? Or tell me, would you like for us to talk this through and come up with a plan? Whatever that is, but that's the way you go at it. It's not And then you said this, and I heard you say this, it's so robotic. And we, so whatever, whoever gave it to us originally, I think it was from the right place and it probably worked early on. But now that we have been in this, now we've become super robotic about it. And it's not filling people up. If we want people to be filled up, we got to meet them where they're at, and we got to meet them in the way that they need to be communicated with as well.
And I think when someone focuses on that parroting action, like I heard you say this, and just simply says and simply regurgitates the exact same words back to them, a lot of times we can say certain words and certain phrases and sentences, and we know what it means in our head, and the other person will hear those certain words, phrases, and sentences, but they'll have a completely different meaning in their head. So if we just regurgitate, I heard you say this, it may tell the person that we know what they're saying when really we don't really know.
Yeah, I think that's why you have to kind of, I'm challenging people who don't think of themselves as empathetic people. I know I'm challenging and I'm stretching people by this, but I'm challenging them to do this because I think we want the end result that we want people to when we interact with them. We'd like for people to perceive us as good listeners. Many of us want that. Many of us think that we are, and many of us want to be that kind of person. And so I'm just challenging people who think that they would say, oh, I'm not like very empathetic. How would I do that? But the issue is clear away the fray, silence the things, focus on the person in front of you, whether it's on the Zoom screen, the Teams screen, in person, at a coffee shop, whatever it is. And to know that the person in front of you, if you make them feel like the most important thing and most important thing in front of you at the moment, they will give you all the other things you want. They just will.
Yeah. It's there's always all the things, so many things. But when I am with somebody or when I'm getting ready to meet with somebody, I try and just give myself a quick reminder. My goal is to make this person feel better after having left me, after having left this interaction. And so if I can remind myself as that goal, then hopefully that does help me to be present with them and be a better listener to them.
Yeah, someone once told me, as you're saying that, and I'm thinking of that situation, someone had said, Heather, you have presence. And I don't mean in the executive presence space. I mean, like, you just have the ability to be present. And for me, like, it is probably one of my number one North Star goals. So I'm running around at mock speed. I have 4 children, the business, I'm a podcaster, I'm a speaker. I mean, I'm like nuts. But when I sit down to this, I'm really trying. And I think that's the key. It's the intentionality. I'm trying really hard to see. I'm trying really hard for you to feel my presence when I'm with you, irrespective of the fact that you could, it is crazy, the world that's around me, right? And so, but I'm trying hard. And I think that's the key. If we just lean into the intentionality of all of this, who do we want to be? And as you said, Matt, how do you want people to feel? Do you want them to feel heard by you? Is that a goal of yours? If it isn't, maybe evaluate, do you want that? Do you have it in you to be present? Do you have it in you to just minimize the distractions? It is hard.
It is. But you can always figure, okay, what can I do to be a little more present?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's not about perfection. Good. Thanks for that, Matt. That's so true.
Yeah.
It's not about perfection. It's just a journey. That's what we're all on together.
That's it. Okay. So a lot of what we've been talking about active listening from the individual level and how to become better at active listening as an individual. But what if you want to create a culture of active listening across your team? How do you help your employees become better listeners?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because right now we're in the process at Employee Fanatics rolling out all these things. We have the book that just came out, The Art of Active Listening. And then we've got the workshop that's coming out that's going to be like a half-day workshop that has teams really interacting one-on-one to have exercises. This is really super interactive exercises where they test themselves on their current listening and learn a couple new skills. And then we're going to be doing a certification program at the end of the year, too, for those who really want to bring it to the workplace and become really active listening champions as part of the movement. So we, believe me, are like hyper, hyper focused on tooling up teams to learn how to do all of these things. And I would say that the biggest thing is you can't control other people. You have to first figure out how you can become better at the thing you want. So if you're seeking, as far as change, if you're seeking a more better active listeners, you got to work on you first. You got to work on your senior team first. You got to work on your direct report, the folks that are like team leads and supervisors. You got to work on everybody. They have to work on themselves. And then you're able to cascade down, showing the new skill set to other people and then bringing them along on some of these interactive journeys of learning how to do it better. But I always tell people, like, we got more control and influence over us and like the circle that we stand in than we do of anything else. I would say lean into that because we don't do that nearly enough. We're not nearly as self-aware. We're not nearly as aware of like how our impact to people outside of us, and how people perceive us and how they feel after they interact with us. And so take a lot more time to get clear on that. And then if you start hearing people chirp back to you that, boy, you're a great listener. You do this, you do that, and you hear it. Now it's time to go, okay, how do I start really bringing this to the team? Because now I've polished up my own listening style. That's what I would say.
Gotcha. So clean your house first.
It's so true. Yeah. So true.
And I think that speaks to something that's really important when it comes to any kind of change management. If you're trying to build a new culture or instill something into your culture, whether it's you as the leader, your leadership team, and then the champions, like you mentioned, it's important to have those champions as well. They have to model the behavior.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You have to model it. I think that's the key, is that if we're talking about management, because I don't know if everybody who listens to this is like manager, it doesn't really matter. In the case that when I talk about leadership, leadership in my mind is everyone, and it's in the moment. Right. And so that would be anybody who's a team member at work, you know, and I'm talking about work, but obviously all this stuff applies at home. I totally get it. But I am a workplace expert. I talk about workplace mostly. And that's because I always say this. Here's a little side note for everybody listening. I am not perfect at this. It happens to be a strength of mine, but I am not perfect at this. And at home, I'm even worse at it. And I'm a work in progress even more at home than I am at work. And so I'm always just like, hypocrite. I know it. I'm hyper like stamping my brain every day and examining how well I did something or how distracted I was with my kids and stuff. So this does apply across the board. But I would say it is a journey. It is worth it. It is a huge gift. I bet you, for anybody who's listening, if you think back on a time when somebody in your life listened to you in a way, they were so present for you and they gave you, let's say, great piece of advice, or they went and did something on your behalf, and you're like, dang, like that. You will never forget that person. And on the other end, you'll never forget the other person who was a jerk, who totally minimized you, who never gave you the attention, who was always looking at something else and doing something else when you're present. You'll never forget that person either. And then the question is, which one would you rather be?
And who would you rather be more loyal to?
Exactly.
I had a coworker in my corporate career, and he had a tale of two managers that they had weekly one-on-ones, like you suggest. There was one manager where sometimes the one-on-ones happened, sometimes they didn't. But when they did happen, it's like he was always looking at his phone, answering emails, saying, oh, hang on, I got to answer this. Hang on, I got to respond to this. Let me do this. And it just frustrated my friend so much because, like, we could never talk about anything. And he felt like he wasn't listened to. Within about a year, he was reporting to a new manager. And he said that one thing he loved so much, at the start of the one-on-one meeting, this new manager would take her phone out and put it on the table and just put it face down, and as like a signal saying, you know what, I'm going to be present with you. This is your time. I'm not paying attention to anything else.
And it's so interesting because I'm not great at that all the time. But if I have a meeting every once a week with one employee and then a few other contractors that like work as a part of my team consistently. And so with her, when I'm meeting with her weekly and we're going over all the things that are going on, that time with just she and I, I'm not looking at anything else. Now, when we're in the whole team meeting where we're all going through the projects and stuff, sometimes I'm like, oh, shoot, you just reminded me. And as I'm on there with them, because they know how I can get scatterbrained. I mean, I just have so much. I'll be like, oops, shoot, let me make sure that thing you just told me to do, I'm going to do it right now so I don't forget. Or so you don't have to put it on Trello to remind me to do it. I'm just going to do it right now. So I'll do that with them. But when I'm with her, I try to give her undivided attention. And these are just examples. It's a level of intentionality. It is a level of intentionality. If you are intentional and you don't, as you said, clean your own closet and you don't take care of you first, if you don't do it, it's just not going to land. It is not. And you have to do it from a place of sincerity. You just do.
Yeah, absolutely. And even still, depending on, when you approach it with intentionality, there can be times where you're literally going through those five cycles right in front of the person. You know what? Yes. I am listening to you and I'm taking action and I'm closing this loop right now.
Yes, especially if it's a real like top of priority thing where it's like the house is burning, like it's that kind of thing, right? If it's that thing, it's going to move even faster. The cycle doesn't go, it's not going to go as slowly if it's in that kind of situation. I would say slow the process down if it's not a life or death or it's not something super urgent, because that decoding phase, it really helps to actually be able to go do the research, particularly when we're looking at like employees, but also like key clients, those clients that are worth a lot to the company. Like it's huge because they see that it's like concierge service. It feels that way as you go through the explanation of what you did for them.
Everybody likes concierge service. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes to feel well taken care of.
Exactly.
Well, yep. Heather, I have learned a lot from you. I've learned a lot from our conversation today, but where can people go to learn more?
I'd say there's two places. One would be employeefanatics.com. I'm assuming you'll put the link. And then the other place is just go to LinkedIn. If you go to LinkedIn and look up Heather Younger, you'll find all the things. So I think that'll be great. You can follow stuff there and get good content as well there.
Oh, yeah. It's been insightful seeing you share the lessons and going into the lessons a bit more in detail on LinkedIn and your social media. So people can certainly learn a lot more just by following your content.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks. And thanks for following me too. I appreciate that, Matt.
Heather, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today.
And thanks for having me. It's been a great treat for me too.
I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Heather Younger. You can learn more from her at employeefanatics.com. Whether it's keynotes, workshops, or consulting, you'll find lots of ways for Heather and her team to help you level up your employee engagement. And if you want to go even deeper into the lessons we discussed today, then be sure and check out Heather's book, The Art of Active Listening. And if you're enjoying the Simple Brand podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button, because that's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Scott McCain. Scott's a globally recognized authority on how organizations and professionals create distinction to attract and retain their customers. And Scott's the author of 8 best-selling customer experience books, including his latest, The Ultimate Customer Experience. 5 steps everyone must know to excite your customers, engage your colleagues, and enjoy your work. It comes out next week. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Scott's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.